You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This week, the country's two labor federations announced a tentative agreement to coordinate get-out-the-vote efforts for the midterm elections in 6 months. While no solid plans have been laid out, a committee will be created and headed by AFL-CIO Political Committee Chair Gerald McEntee and Change to Win Vice Chair Edgar Romney. The AFL-CIO's Lane Windham explained why there is a need for coordination.
We're going to work together. We're creating a National Labor Coordinating Committee where the unions that are part of the AFL-CIO and the unions that are part of Change to Win can coordinate efforts, make sure we're not duplicating efforts, and absolutely make sure that we can make workers' voices heard in this election cycle.
On a national level, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win have had a hard time seeing eye to eye since the split last year. Change to Win's Carol Florman says the election year coordination between the two federations is a good start.
There has been continued work together and cooperation at the local and the state level. So what's new here is that this is the first time that Change to Win and the AFL-CIO are collaborating at a national level.
Planet Check. He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
In his reform bid to replace James Hoffa as president of the Teamsters, Oregon Teamsters official Tom Leadham's grassroots campaign collected 55,000 petition signatures in a little over 4 weeks. At the Detroit Labor Notes conference, Leadham said his campaign is about restoring real worker power. Leadham accuses Hoffa of celebrity business unionism that has failed to deliver strong contracts and pensions for Teamsters.
Picket lines have been replaced with PR. Members and officers are reduced to groupies. We're passive spectators in our own union. This is a complete U-turn from the course the Teamsters took in the 1990s when we broke organized crime's stranglehold on our union and went to work rebuilding Teamster power based on rank and file power.
Leadham has a more complex agenda, but he says it really comes down to this.
We need to keep fighting the boss.
And Leadham says rebuilding worker power on the job is the way to really do that.
Here is today's economic report. What's more American, a Ford Mustang or a Toyota Sienna? If you look under the hood and beyond the name, you might be in for a surprise. New statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and reported in Thursday's Wall Street Journal show that the Sienna, assembled in Indiana, contains 90% North American parts. On the flip side, the Mustang, an American icon, is assembled with 45% of its components coming from abroad.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome to All Things Reconsidered with your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome again to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and it is Sunday night, May the 14th, 2006. What a fantastic week it's been. We've seen all kinds of stuff, and this weekend just got crazy, man. It just got nuts with all the various accusations and indictments and sealed warrants and you name it, it was flying. The paper was flying in D.C. this weekend, and I'm not talking, you know, kind of like my neighborhood on Halloween, right? With the, you know, toilet paper and the, you know. Anyway, we'll get back to that later. I have some interesting things, interesting clips to, yes, and by the way, if you've never heard that intro to that song, that is actually a little tune called Green Grass and High Tides by a band called The Outlaws. Southern rock. Dig that. Pretty interesting tune. But anyway, got some interesting audio for you tonight. A number of clips from various things, not the least of which is the entire, if you were watching, well, let's see, no, Rama comes on at 8. But earlier tonight on 60 Minutes, there was a couple of really fantastic, they did a good show tonight. They did a couple of really great shows, segments tonight. One of which was the, there was a section on Andy Stern, who is the president of the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU. And they did a segment just basically on him and what he's done with the Change to Win Coalition and just a really great positive labor segment there on 60 Minutes. And also, there was a segment on the Dixie Chicks and sort of what happened with them, with, you know, at what they've been up to since, you know, the public had this, you know, this knee-jerk reaction about when Natalie Maines said she was ashamed to be from Texas because that's where the president was from, you know, when she was in England. And then people started breaking, you know how they do that thing, the breaking of the records, and they have the bonfires and they burn the books, and, you know, it's all very, very, very Middle Eastern, burn the witches kind of stuff. So, yeah, I've got some clips from all of that stuff. We're going to play them throughout the program tonight. But the first thing that I wanted to play for you tonight, before I get too off into the show, is a message from the President of the United States, who won the election in 2000. Agnes, if you could go ahead and cue up that clip, I would greatly appreciate it, please.
In 2000, when you overwhelmingly made the decision to elect me as your 43rd president, I knew the road ahead would be difficult.
Okay.
We have accomplished so much, yet challenges lie ahead. In the last 6 years, we have been able to stop global warming. No one could have predicted the negative results of this. Glaciers that once were melting are now on the attack. As you know, these renegade glaciers have already captured parts of Upper Michigan and Northern Maine, but I assure you, we will not let the glaciers win. Right now, in the second week of May 2006, we are facing perhaps the worst gas crisis in history. We have way too much gasoline. Gas is down to 19 cents a gallon, and the oil companies are hurting. I know that I am partly to blame by insisting that cars run on trash. I am therefore proposing a federal bailout to our oil companies because, hey, if it were the other way around, you know the oil companies would help us. On a positive note, we worked hard to save welfare, fix Social Security, and, of course, provide the free universal health care we all enjoy today. But all this came at a high cost. As I speak, the gigantic national budget surplus is down to a perilously low $11 trillion. And don't get any ideas. That money is staying in the very successful lockbox. We're not touching it. Of course, we could give economic aid to China or lend money to the Saudis again. But right now, we're already so loved by everyone in the world that America American tourists can't even go over to Europe anymore without getting hugged. There are some of you who would like to spend our money on some made-up war. To you, I say, what part of lockbox don't you understand? What if there's a hurricane or a tornado? Unlikely, I know, because of the anti-hurricane and tornado machine I was instrumental in helping to develop. But what if? What if the scientists are right and one of those giant glaciers hits Boston? That's why we have the lockbox. As for immigration, solving that came at a heavy cost, and I personally regret the loss of California. However, the new Mexifornian economy is strong, and El Presidente Schwarzenegger is doing a great job. There have been some setbacks. Unfortunately, the confirmation process for Supreme Court Justice Michael Moore was bitter and divisive. However, I could not be more proud of how the House and Senate pulled together to confirm the nomination of Chief Justice George Clooney. Baseball, our national pastime, still lies under the shadow of steroid accusations. But I have faith in Baseball Commissioner George W. Bush when he says, we will find the steroid users if we have to tap every phone in America. In 2001, when I came into office, our national security was the most important issue. The threat of terrorism was real. Who knew that 6 years later, Afghanistan would be the most popular spring break destination, or that Six Flags Tehran is the fastest growing amusement park in the Middle East? And the scariest thing we Americans have to fear is live from New York, it's Saturday night.
All right, that was Al Gore live from Saturday Night Live last night. And actually, I wasn't able to watch it because I was actually doing a radio program at the time. But as I was doing the radio program, I was hearing or reading these things from all over the net saying, oh, my God, Al Gore was hilarious, blah, 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 blah. So thank you to Crooks and Liars for posting that wonderful, wonderful clip. And if you go to the front page of the Head On Radio Network, there's actually a link directly to that post on Crooks and Liars that you can go and download the video and watch it yourself. He actually looked like he was actually sitting at the desk in the Oval Office. It was quite eerie. Not any more eerie than Mexifornia or perhaps Baseball Commissioner George W. Bush. But, yes. Anyway, what a great way to get this show started. oh, my goodness. Okay, so we have a number of other clips, but before we get too far off into clip land, I would like to remind you that we are chatting in the Head On Radio Network chat room. You can go to headonradionetwork.com, headonradionetwork.com, click on live chat, and, you can get right into that chat room and chat with some of the funniest folks in the world. Just a great bunch of guys in there, and gals, excuse me, and folks, I guess is the best way to put it. Great bunch of folks in there, and you can also, if you'd like to comment on the radio program, you can dial into, yes, we take phone calls, you can dial into 1-877-443-2366, that's 1-877, the number 4, and then Head On. We'll get you into the studios of the Head On Radio Network in an undisclosed location in the center of wild and wonderful West Virginia. And our wonderful producer, Agnes, who is having a wonderful Mother's Day, I certainly hope, will pick up the telephone, have a conversation with you before you have a conversation with me. So if you're interested in doing that, please do that. You can also send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com, and Bruce Birch is spelled with U's all the way through. Bruce Birch at Last but not least, the stream is being provided by the White Rose Society, and this show is also archived there at the White Rose Society by Ben Birch, who is no relation, but I'll claim him anyway. Maybe we're, as he told me the other day, we are at least seventh cousins, as is everyone on the planet. So think about that when you're going to bed tonight with your wife or husband. Weird. Okay.
You can check out the archives at whiterosesociety.org, and that'll get you right in there. So, okay. Okay, so if you, yeah, all right, well, where was I going with all that? Oh, yes, that was the standard line of stuff. Now, wanted to bring you to some news that's going on around the world. Before I get too far into anything of heavy significance, wanted to bring you up to speed on some stuff that's going on south of us down in Cuba. And that would be what's happening with Fidel. I got this interesting story here, but it's out of Al Jazeera. Now, I'm sure that most of you who are listening to this radio program actually will listen to this, but you know, those on the right, anything that comes out of Al Jazeera, they totally blow it. You know, they're like, "Oh, that's from that there communist thing or Islamic poo." Them there beheaders, them savages out there in the Middle East. We don't want to listen to that there. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to listen to this because this actually is kind of interesting because it deals with energy. And one of the things that I have read and have delved into a little bit in this program and also in Fourth Estate Radio, the other radio program that I do, is the fact that the new power around the world isn't going to be based so much in monetary or gold as much as it will be based in the control of energy. Well, Cuba, being the fantastic place that it is, has decided that it wants to allow China to station 12 oil rigs in its waters in the Gulf of Mexico, just south of the U.S. Now, this news has angered some U.S. politicians who say that the U.S. economic embargo of Cuba locks them out of the potentially lucrative operation at a time when oil prices are soaring. Can't have your cake and eat it too, boys. Two Republican politicians have submitted a bill that would ease the embargo by allowing U.S. companies to engage in transactions and travel to Cuba without the special license required by the U.S. government. Republican U.S. Senator Larry Craig of Idaho, that's right, Idaho, said the American public would be shocked and stunned that as this country faces a serious energy crisis at home, countries like China, India, Canada, Spain, and Norway are exploring and drilling 50 miles off the U.S. coast. Okay. I knew it. The minute that Cuba starts drilling oil and doing that, okay, we're probably going to invade there in the next 30 days, I would imagine. There will be this huge bloody coup. 15,000 people will die on the American side, all to get 12 oil rigs, I'll betcha. Okay, we need to go take a break, but I just wanted to bring you that interesting tidbit of information following the address by the true president of the United States, Albert Gore. If you want to get in on the radio program, I certainly do encourage you to do so. You can call me if you're so inclined or reclined at this time of the evening by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You can send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. Me and this mouse will be right back.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves, too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
All right, you're back on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Burch, and I just wanted to, you know, I was during the break there, I was watching the chat room, and they're having a discussion about different types of cigars, and I've always been partial to Honduran or Dominican cigars, especially Dominican cigars of Cuban seed, because the Cuban seed actually does something different when it goes to Dominica to the Dominican Republic. And it's grown there. It just tastes different. But anyway, so if you want to go discuss cigars, head on over to the Head On Radio Network chat room, and you can talk about cigars there, too. They're talking about cigars. Cuban cigars. Anytime you mention Cuba, of course, cigars comes up. Doesn't it? Okay, well, you know, I also was watching this thing on 60 Minutes tonight, and... one of the segments was on this gentleman, Andy Stern. And Andy Stern is the president of the Service Employees International Union, who is part of the Change to Win coalition. Actually, he is probably the guy who sort of spearheaded the break of, you know, I think it was a coalition of about 14 unions that broke away from the AFL-CIO. And, you know, he talked about it in great length tonight on that segment on 60 Minutes. And I actually was able to capture the audio from that, and we'll make it available to you. If you go to the front page of headonradionetwork.com to the show post, to the post that I put up, and I think it's called All Things with Bruce Burch, or something like that. You can, if you look down into the post, there's a number of links, and in one of those links is the full recording, if you will, of that particular event that showed it. I'm looking to see what's the name of it. Okay, it's called The Full 60 Minutes Piece on Andy Stern, SEIU President. It's an audio file. It's an MP3 file. You can download it, listen to it, and then, of course, you have to destroy it because then if you don't, it will explode. So you have to do that quickly. But there is one particular way, something that he put something a very interesting way, because, you know, one of the things that we are dealing with right now in the current economic system is sort of a throwback to the Reagan system of trickle-down economics. In other words, you know, if we fatten up the fat cats up at the top of the line, the chances are they'll, you know, want to expand their business operations and hire more workers, and it'll be good for the economy. So we've got to give big tax breaks to big business. We've got to provide a very fertile ground for these huge corporations to operate, you know, and you know, this whole trickle down theory, you know, has even trickled down. The theory itself has trickled down to local economies, where I'm sure, you know, anywhere that you are, you've heard about the counties and the cities giving away these huge incentives and, you know, tax free incentives or you know, even sometimes straight up cash to companies to locate there. You know, this entire government, this corporate welfare, which is exactly what it is, you know, we're going to throw money at money so that it brings in money. I don't, you know. And why? Because the politicians want to get, you know, yes, they want to create jobs for people. There's no doubt the politicians want to create jobs for people, because guess who votes for the politicians? It's the people. Well, you know, earlier in our country, it was the landed gentry. Those who had property could vote. But now, you know, anybody can vote. Even if you're homeless, you can vote, in most places anyway. But the idea that trickle-down economics works is bull, okay? It's a falsehood. And actually, there's been a number of radio hosts that have correlated the times of tax revenue into the U.S. government and the growth of business with times where actually the tax burden was a little bit higher on the corporation. And actually, when the tax burden has been a little bit higher on the corporation, they tend to grow more, which is kind of an interesting thing. Agnes, if you would please roll that Andy Stern clip for me. Thank you.
I think I'm going to win the Nobel Prize because I think I can finally prove that Ronald Reagan is wrong, George Bush is wrong. Wealth does not trickle down. It trickles up.
Wealth does not trickle down. It trickles up. So the trickle-down theory of economics, as my good friend and fellow co-host on Fourth Estate Radio would say, the trickle-down theory is opposite world thinking. You know, again, a perfect example of what they're saying is not what they really intend, is not the real intention of their actions. So as we go through the show tonight and we talk about some of these things, you know, keep that in mind. And if you want to go download that clip off of the front page of The Horn, Head On Radio Network website, please do so. Go to headonradionetwork.com, and it's right there on the front page, as is the full audio from the Dixie Chicks thing that we'll get to a little bit later on. But we're going to go over to the phones. Looks like wait a minute. Before we do that, hang on. Looks like we're right down toward the bottom of the hour. Tell you what, Agnes, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and pick up the telephones on the other side. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, Head On. I'll be right back.
Thank you. This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive Magazine. Welcome to Progressive Radio. Today it's a rare treat to have in the studio with me a star of TV and movies, George Takei, Star Trek's Mr. Sulu, George Takei, who came out last fall as working with the Human Rights Campaign to combat the right-wing push against gay marriage. George Takei, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Good to be with you and to discuss this with you. But let me put to what you said about my coming out last year in context. I've been together with my partner, Brad Altman, for 2 decades now, almost 20 years. And we've been out in that sense with our family and friends and with the various activities that we're involved in the community and the civic arena. And we support nonprofits, and we've been, our names have been engraved together in granite on donor walls. So we've been out in that sense. What I had not done.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
Hi, Trump.
So a child that age should know 2-to-4-word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
right, you're back on... I almost gave you the wrong radio program. You're back on All Things with Bruce Birch. Glad to have you back with us. Before we went to the break, I was talking a little bit about just all kinds of neat stuff. We had Al Gore to start the show with, then we went into the Cubans, and then I started talking... we do all kinds of things here. That's why we call it All Things Reconsidered. And then we had a little bit of a glitch there during the break. We're going to run the progressive, but we'll do that here shortly. Let's go over to the phones and pick on. Let's see. I'm going to randomly throw a dart, and it looks like it's going to land on Jim. Jim, are you with us? Hello, Mr. Jim. Is Jim there? Lost him. Okay. Well, maybe he'll call back. Okay. Well, let's go back over to I wanted to take a look at a couple other stories here. Now, as you know, if you listened to the radio program last night, and if you're listening to this program tonight, for sure by now you know that. All Things Reconsidered. Yes, that's the name of the program. For sure, you know that Karl Rove was indicted is about to be indicted or something like that's going to happen very quickly. So if you're not sure, if you hadn't heard that, then you heard it here first. Let me quickly go over this and we'll head back to the telephone lines. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald spent more than half a day Friday at the offices of Patton Boggs. And who but an attorney would be named Patton Boggs? The law firm representing Karl Rove. During the course of that meeting, Fitzgerald served attorneys for former Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove with an indictment charging the embattled White House official with perjury and lying to investigators related to his role in the CIA leak case, and instructed one of the attorneys to tell Rove that he has 24 business hours to get his affairs in order, high-level sources with direct knowledge of the meeting said Saturday morning. Now, the question did come up last night, by the way. This is Bruce talking, not the article. The question did come up last night that why was one of the attorneys instructed to tell Rove that he had 24 business hours to get his affairs in order. I'm thinking business. Okay, 24 business hours. In other words, perhaps they will be announcing this Tuesday morning. Perhaps he'll give him Monday to get his shiznat together. You thought I was going to say a bad word, didn't you? to get his stuff together, and then Tuesday morning he'll be presented with an indictment and frog-marched probably from his house or, from his lawyer's office. I'm sure, surely it won't be actually from the White House itself. I mean, we can only hope that something would be as wonderful as that. Or actually him taking off running, like through the Rose Garden, what I'd like to see. And here's what I'd like to see. Okay, in Bruce's world, here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the Secret Service or whatever police arm it is that arrests people when they're indicted. Here's Fitzgerald with his cops, and they go and knock on the door of the White House, and there's a camera behind his head, right? It's Cops, right? The TV show Cops. So he's behind his head, and they let him in, and they're like, we have an indictment. We are seeking the arrest of Karl Rove. And all of a sudden, you see Karl peek his head around the corner, sees him, and then starts running, down a hallway. And now all of a sudden, Fitzgerald and the cops and the cameraman, they're all running after him, and the cops are going, stop, stop, stop. It's the police. You need to, blah, 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 and then Karl, he dives through the glass door leading into the Rose Garden, right? And so he's diving through the glass door, and he picks up and shakes himself off, and takes off down through the rose bushes, And about that time, this cop comes out from the side and just wham, tackles him from the side and just knocks his glasses off and his shoes go flying. And that's what I'd like to see happen at the White House with Karl Rove. And then they once they have him arrested, after the cops beat on him for about, 15 minutes or so. Okay, maybe 20. All right, okay, 30 minutes, okay, 30. That's it, 30 minutes. After the cops beat on him for 30 minutes, they drag him to his feet. You know, his shirt is now, you know, like out over his pants, and his tie is all sideways, and he's got a smudge of dirt on his face, you know, and his glasses are all crooked, you know. One of the lenses popped out, you know, and they march him back through the White House and out into a patrol car. And at that time, the lieutenant comes over and he says, "No one is above the law." Okay, that's my version of what should happen to Karl Rove should he get indicted on Tuesday. Let's go back to the phones. We have Richard on line one. Richard, how are you today, sir?
I'm very good. I would like to know what a frog march is.
A frog march is where it's basically what happens when, you know, you have, if you're arrested and you have your arms behind your back and you are handcuffed, that's frog marched.
And you march, I guess.
You're being marched. Yeah, you know, two guys at both sides, you know. You're being walked away or whatever. Yeah. That's always been my understanding. Maybe it's a different thing entirely where they make you jump or hop or something. I'm not sure, really.
You know, it's really funny. There are these terms that we use, but we never stop to think about what they mean.
What the hell does that mean anyway?
Yeah, right. Between a rock.
So how you doing tonight?
Huh? What's
how that? You doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm fine. It's getting hot here. You know, I called last night. And I was talking about our managed care operation, healthcare.
Yes.
My county. And
I do remember.
And you asked me to call back tonight, so here I am. And where we left off was I was talking a little bit about the history of the Contra Costa health plan. So if you're interested, I'll get right into it.
Well, please do. I'm very interested in that.
Well, just a little background for people who didn't hear the show last night. My county, Contra Costa County in Northern California, was the first government entity in the country to start its own HMO, its own health maintenance organization, which is now available to anybody in the county. And the way that this started came out of Medicaid. I think... our version of Medicaid in California is called Medi-Cal, and this is mm-hmm. health coverage for the least fortunate among us.
Okay.
Now, one point of interest, Medicaid, in some ways has not worked well for California residents. One of the problems has been it's been fragmented, and people have had to go to the doctor and pay fee for service. And many doctors, maybe most, don't want to take Medi-Cal because the payment is so paltry. The payments are so low that a doctor typically will lose money on the transaction by the time he's
really? Okay.
What's that?
Really? Okay.
Yeah, by the time he's processed his paperwork, he's losing money. And the result of this is that a person's care is very fragmented. Maybe they'll get it, maybe they won't. The doctor may go on vacation. The other people in his group, let's say, may not want to deal with this poor person, you know. Generally, in the hospital, they'll be treated okay. But it's the other stuff that, you know, isn't so good. And I have a personal interest in all this because a dear friend of mine died. And I think that the reason why he died was that he did not get the care he needed when he needed it because of this fragmentation. And so that's my own personal interest. I wish my friend were still alive. And I think that if he had lived in my county, he would still be alive. Okay, back to the history here. So we had some people, and I don't know who they were, But they got together and they say, we've got to be able to do this better. We can do better for, you know, for our own indigent population. If we put everybody into a pool and cover them as a group and set up our own healthcare system for these people. So they did it. They offered it as an option. You know, you can do your fee for service if you want, or you can throw the whole Medi-Cal into this pool, and, you know, we think we can do it better. So this was about 22 years ago, and it worked. It really was a success. And so after that, they thought, gee, this is working so well. Why don't we offer it as an option for health coverage to our employees? So they offered it to the county employees for a penny a month, and it was called the Penny Plan. And this went over very well, too. You know, they just hired on some more doctors, some more nurses, built a building or two, and, you know, and made it happen. And so after that, they decided to do it, as a regular HMO. So it's now offered to employers in the county and to anybody who wants to buy in. And that's what I do. So I pay a monthly premium, okay, and my coverage is very good. So that's the history of it. I've been in the system for about 10 years.
Wow. Okay. Now, how are you dealing with the whole reform of Medicare that's going on now?
You know, I'm aware that it's happening. There's so much going on that I haven't looked at it. Tell me.
Well, I mean, you know, there is a considerable effort at the federal level to force the states into totally redoing their mental health system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is sort of a Medicare, Social Security kind of based situation. There is a significant, of course, there's, you know, obviously the Medicare Part D thing that's happening.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, I'd really love to be able to sit down and take a look at exactly how you guys have been able to do that, even though hearing the history is intriguing. Because it seems like to me, if you can do it, why can't that be replicated nationwide?
I see no reason why it cannot. since 22 years ago, a few other counties in California have started their own duplication of what we're doing. And you know, the one thing that your listeners tonight may not remember, and I forgot to say it, is that I'm a commissioner on this.
Okay.
Because it's a government agency, there is a requirement, at least in the county, that there has to be a citizen board that provides input and suggestions. Now, anything that we recommend will go to the county's board of supervisors for a yay or a nay. And in answer to your question about what's going on with, let's say you said Medicaid, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We try to keep ahead, you know, to try to try to figure out which way the wind is blowing and to be prepared in advance. And the funding is very, very complicated, as you might imagine. We have been put in a very bad position by the state of California. It seems like whenever we have a Republican governor, if he has any intentions of running for president, what he wants to show everybody is that he balanced the state's budget. And I don't know, you know, what Arnold's plans are, but we went through this with Pete Wilson last time around. What happened was that Sacramento stole all our money. So our sales taxes...
Yes.
What's that?
Oh, yeah, I was just agreeing with you, yeah.
You know, so our sales tax money all goes to Sacramento and then it comes back. This is to, you know, to any local entity, whether it's city or county. Well, twice, the money just didn't come back, you know. And so we've had to dance without any funds. And the
wow.
The situation now is really dire because we're $20 million in the hole. And for the first time that I can remember, well, this year and last year, we're having to cut stuff. And my premiums have skyrocketed. So this is the downside. I am paying.
That's the downside.
Yeah, now it's...
Now, would you even venture to guess that there's been any effort afoot at the state level to ensure that what your county is doing should fail?
Oh, you mean to try to make it die?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I certainly have not seen any signs of it. In other words, that every county in the state is running its own health care system of some kind for at least mm-hmm. the poor folks. But if I look at the next county to us, like Alameda County, which is, you know, has the cities of Oakland and Berkeley, my observation is that the Board of Supervisors has been strangling their hospital for decades, you know, just
really?
Choking
okay.
money off, and it's in a bad state. I don't, you know, our money has to. Some of it has to just come out of the county's general budget.
Sure.
So it's worked for the most part. It's worked very well. And the CEO of the health plan has steered a very, very fine line. So our finances just about balance year after year. But a couple of years ago, he's been doing this for about 21 years. And he quit. And I think he just got so discouraged because no longer could he pull the rabbit out of a hat.
Wow. Well,
so
you know, I dare to go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that. So we have a new CEO, and I think he's pretty good. The commission meets every 2 months. And we get a big dog and pony show from the staff. Of the 17 people who are on the commission, I'm one of three people who are actual members of the health plan who use it. So I not only, you know, am a member and use it, but I also can help steer the thing. So commissioners have been, what's that?
And that's a good thing. I mean, I think that in any publicly funded kind of situation, there should absolutely be, for lack of a better term, there should absolutely be consumers of that service who sit on the board or commission that helps direct that you know that entity, whatever it is. I mean, I think that's
democracy in action. I think
absolutely.
I know that we have one seat that is reserved for Medicaid recipients.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Most of the people on the commission are simply volunteers. Two are doctors. One is a pharmacist. One is an optometrist, I believe. And the rest are from the county at large in one way or another. So, and it's very, one of the things that's very exciting is the kind of creativity that can come up from this kind of governance. We once had a discussion about chiropractors. You know, most health plans don't cover chiropractic. So we had
sure.
a discussion among ourselves and, you know, what's your experience? What's your experience been? You know, and more positive than negative. And acupuncture the same way. So we now cover acupuncture and chiropractic.
Oh, that's cool.
And, you know, so a person gets, I believe it's up to 20 sessions a year of either or both, and it has to be approved by whoever the person's gatekeeper is, their primary care provider. And now, trying to think, Yeah, we have an advice nurse service so that anybody in the county can call at any hour of day or night and talk with a nurse for, you know, just recommendation. And one of our commissioners who worked for the phone company at the time suggested bringing money in by offering this service to other counties. So now there are about six other counties in California, and if you call the advice nurse in Alpine County, you're going to get our people. And so Alpine County is like a lot of counties in the West in California. It's a huge county and area, but it's only got one and a half towns, the whole county.
Right, right.
And in the winter, there's a ski resort. That's it. That's that whole, the populace of the entire county. And they have a county seat, you know. But they can't afford to run any kind of health system. But at least if you're in that county and you break your leg, you get on the phone, and you'll get one of our nurses, maybe 400 miles away. So this has just been a win-win all the way around. So they get a low price service, and we get money coming.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, and Richard, what I want to do, if you can, could you email me a link to that system out there so I can take a look at it and see, you know, just to sort of peruse it a little bit?
Yeah, you won't see very much on it, by the way.
Okay.
But, you know, it's sort of, you know, land official website, but
there'll be somebody I can contact there to get more information, though, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Sure. I mean, we do still have a marketing person, although what came down in the middle of all this financial, you know, crunch, they got an actuary in, and the actuary told them that people in my class of membership actually were costing the county three times what they were taking in from us, and that was that was the reason why my premiums doubled and my copayments tripled. So I'm paying for two people, I would say around $900 a month for health care, and that's a lot of money, and it especially sounds like a lot of money to people who aren't here. You know, as you know from your recent trip out to California, you could see what things cost here as opposed to where you live. You're in North Carolina, okay, right?
Yeah, I'm in North Carolina, so.
Yeah, you remember the prices?
Say that again?
I said, do you remember the sticker shock of going into a restaurant, for instance, in California?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, goodness, yes. Actually, you know, quite interestingly enough, though, is that the price, when I was out there a couple weeks ago, the prices weren't that much different.
Oh, really?
Maybe a little bit higher, but not a whole lot higher.
Yeah, I hear the music.
Yeah, and we're right at the top of the hour. So I tell you what, Richard, email me, Bruce at BruceBirch.com, the link to that health care plan, and I'll take a look at it. Maybe we'll have another discussion here real soon.
That sounds fine. Okay, we'll do. So long, Bruce.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so long.
So long.
And that was Richard from California, from Contra Costa County, and talking about a Medicare plan out there that they've got going on, or a one single-payer system. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name's Bruce Birch. We'll be right back.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This week, the country's two labor federations announced a tentative agreement to coordinate get-out-the-vote efforts for the midterm elections in 6 months. While no solid plans have been laid out, a committee will be created and headed by AFL-CIO Political Committee Chair Gerald McEntee and Change to WIN Vice Chair Edgar Romney. The AFL-CIO's Lane Windham explained why there is a need for coordination.
we're going to work together. We're creating a National Labor Coordinating Committee where the unions that are part of the AFL-CIO and the unions that are part of Change to Win can coordinate efforts, make sure we're not duplicating efforts, and absolutely make sure that we can make workers' voices heard in this election cycle.
On a national level, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win have had a hard time seeing eye to eye since the split last year. Change to Win's Carol Florman says the election year coordination between the two federations is a good start.
There has been continued work together and cooperation at the local and the state level. So what's new here is that this is the first time that Change to Win and the AFL-CIO are collaborating at a national level.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
In his reform bid to replace James Hoffa as president of the Teamsters, Oregon Teamsters official Tom Leadham's grassroots campaign collected 55,000 petition signatures in a little over 4 weeks. At the Detroit Labor Notes conference, Leadham said his campaign is about restoring real worker power. Leadham accuses Hoffa of celebrity business unionism that has failed to deliver strong contracts and pensions for Teamsters.
Picket lines have been replaced with PR. Members and officers are reduced to groupies. We're passive spectators in our own union. This is a complete U-turn from the course the Teamsters took in the 1990s when we broke organized crime's stranglehold on our union and went to work rebuilding Teamster power based on rank and file power.
Leadham has a more complex agenda, but he says it really comes down to this.
We need to keep fighting the boss.
And Leadham says rebuilding worker power on the job is the way to really do that.
Here is today's economic report. What's more American, a Ford Mustang or a Toyota Sienna? If you look under the hood and beyond the name, you might be in for a surprise. New statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and reported in Thursday's Wall Street Journal show that the Sienna, assembled in Indiana, contains 90% North American parts. On the flip side, the Mustang, an American icon, is assembled with 45% of its components coming from abroad.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. When you're calling up your mom on Sunday for Mother's Day, or mom, when you're speaking to your kids, just so you know, the NSA may be on the line too, and it doesn't matter that you're not related to Osama. The NSA has been secretly collecting the phone call records of tens of millions of Americans, reports USA Today. The NSA's goal is to create a database for every call ever made within the nation's border, a source told the paper, calling it the largest database ever assembled in the world. And surprise, surprise, the NSA isn't using warrants to monitor these calls either, despite the legal requirement to do so under the FISA Act. Who's the man who set this whole thing up? None other than Air Force General Michael Hayden, Bush's appointee to head the CIA. But he wasn't alone. He got his friends in the corporate sector to go along. The NSA's been working glove hand in glove hand with the telecommunications companies that consumers ourselves sign up with. AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South all are in league with the NSA, furnishing data on 200 million Americans to Big Brother. Only Q West refused to play ball, according to the paper. You've heard of the military-industrial complex. Well, this is the national security telecomplex. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Hi, Matt.
Back on with Bruce Birch and All Things Reconsidered. So back to be glad with you. So glad to be back with you on this wonderful Sunday evening, Mother's Day 2006. I called my mom today and wished her a happy Mother's Day. And we had some nasty storms roll through this part of the country this afternoon, or actually starting really this morning. And we had hail and some tornadoes close by, and the first time that I can remember that we had two hailstorms in one day here in Greensboro, North Carolina. The weather is becoming freakish, folks. I'm thinking we want to run the Al Gore thing again, where he talked about the machine that he invented, a machine that destroys anyway, all right. I'm just going down a trail there that just didn't seem to make much sense. Wanted to bring another quick story to your attention, along with the entire the whole situation with Cuba selling oil to China. Here's an interesting thing. We were talking recently or last night a little bit about the fair use of the internet and keeping it a neutral area, and apparently now the ISPs are rising up and saying that if online video becomes too, how can I put it, if the data use of online video, high definition programming, becomes too hoggish of the internet, the ISPs, internet service providers, are now saying that they're going to have to beef up the internet's capacity to be able to handle that huge amount of data flowing through the various routers and switches and hubs and other pieces of equipment that make up the internet around the world. Now, of course, you know, they're saying this, but of course, how is that going to happen? Well, to offset that cost, the ISPs want to start charging content providers to ensure delivery of large video files, for example. Now, internet activists and consumer groups are vehemently against these plans, saying that they amount to tilting the internet's level playing field. One of the things that encourages innovation, they want legislation to guarantee a neutral internet, but prospects appear slim. Now I'm thinking, you know, okay. 1 megabyte per second, 1 megabit per second, tap into the internet backbone in downtown Atlanta, bought wholesale, costs an ISP $10 to $20 a month. Now, they turn around and sell that. I'm reading as I'm going here. For about 30 times more, I'm thinking. Anyway, point being is that, guess what? Here very soon, if you want to be able to have a broadband connection that will handle watching videos like from YouTube or Google Video or whatever, chances are you're going to have to subsidize again the cost of that. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and he's got his hand out waiting for you to put some money in it. Okay. Yes, we had tornadoes here locally. Yes, we had some hailstorms. And yes, we have some callers on the line. Let's head on over to Jim on line one. Jim, how are you tonight? And welcome to All Things.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and how are you, sir?
Okay, I guess. You know, what you just said, as far as the internet, what are they going to do, try to make it a cable network? I mean, isn't that a bit redundant?
I think it is a bit redundant.
I mean, you know, you've got cable TV, all these other mechanisms that can deliver a visual problem to all the people who want to suck on it. I mean, why should the Internet be a part of that? I don't know.
Well, you know, anytime, anywhere that AOL Time Warner can milk another buck out of mankind, it will do it.
That's right. You know, earlier you were talking about trickle-down economics, and I had to do something else. I was watching something on HBO, actually. And I wanted to say this. I remember when Reagan took office, he had a OMB director named David Stockman. You remember him?
Okay. I do remember the name, yes.
Okay, he wrote a book called The Power of Politics. Well, after Stockman took his position as OMB director, he had given an interview to the Atlantic Monthly, which said the supply-side economics was voodoo economics, and basically took Keynesian economics and stood it on its head. And, you know, basically said it just doesn't work. And there was a big to-do about that. Stockman almost lost his job. But even since 1981, after Reagan took office, his OMB director, Mr. Stockman, in his interview with Atlantic Monthly, for which he was hauled on the carpet big time, and his later book, which he wrote after he left office, The Power of Politics, just said how Laffer's theories were just ridiculous. It doesn't trickle down. It just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It's voodoo economics. And, you know, and they still have the same failed policy they're trying to use. I mean, they're just basically exhuming old people like Rumsfeld and whoever and old theories. It's just, I don't know.
Exhuming is the right terminology, too, man. It's like they're bringing them back from the dead, right?
I've never witnessed an exhumation, but I don't think it'd be very pleasant, and I don't think these exhumations have been very pleasant, very good for the American people.
No, they haven't. I'm laughing, but it just, you know, because at some point it becomes so absurd you can't help but giggle. I mean, it's just, you know, had this been written in a book, it never would have made the bestseller list.
What's that?
It would have been too dark.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, if you read The Power of Politics, the book that Stockman wrote, and he was his original mentor was Moynihan of New York. Okay, that's how he got into.
Okay, Patrick, right?
But it's a very good book. It's old, but I mean, you know, relatively speaking, it's old. I have it. And, you know, looking through.
I'll definitely see if I can dig up a copy.
Yeah, David Stockman, and you know, here was Reagan's own OMB director saying, you know, look, you know, your economic policies are just flawed, and they're not going to work. I said, read John Maynard Keynes. For God's sake, not Laffer.
Well, you know, so I mean, and just from a very basic standpoint, you know, human nature, especially for folks who are in business for themselves to make money, are they going to use the money that they're making to create more opportunities? I don't think there's a huge disconnect there.
I mean,
you know, and
these are not eleemosynary organizations. You know, the profit motive is there, number one, and the shareholders, number two. You know, that's who's the only people they're going to benefit from trickle-down economics are those people who hold stocks in these companies.
That's right.
That's it, period.
Well, and it definitely does not trickle. It definitely does not trickle down to those who need the resources the most. And you know, but it makes
a truth here.
Right.
I mean, Tiny Tim's crutch remains by the wall, empty, unused. And Bob Cratchit does not get away wage increase.
Yeah.
And I guess Ebenezer becomes Lucifer's chief accountant.
Which is exactly all the more reason why we need to be fighting harder to get these unions into these workplaces to drive the wages up. You know?
Agreed.
Agreed. I think, Jim, if you didn't hear, did you watch 60 Minutes tonight?
No,
Okay, well, if you get a chance to go to the front page of the Head On Radio Network website and download that audio clip of Andy Stern, it was as close to a pro-union 15-minute advertisement as 60 Minutes could probably get without coming right and saying, everybody needs to join the union, you know, because they really portrayed the unions and specifically the Change to Win Coalition and the SEIU, but also Andy Stern in sort of a very humbling, positive way. And, you know, I can't help it, but, you know, I'll say it again. I was really sort of, I've never read too much about him as a person, but he really seems to be one of these guys that really believes in what he's doing and is a true believer and puts his money where his mouth is and goes out to the rallies and, you know, drives his own car, lives in an apartment, you know, and he is a huge union boss.
Well, you know, so, historically, Bruce, when dictatorships come to power, like Hitler, Stalin, people like that, the trade unions were the first to go.
Yep, you're right.
I mean, they were. Absolutely. And they substituted other things for them. There's some types of, you know, loaded with all types of, I guess, what you call xylocaine or whatever, but they were the first casualties of those political movements. And I think that's a historical fact that should not be lost upon it.
You know, and we need to say that at every opportunity we get a chance to, when we're out and about and doing our conversations with people, we need to remind them of that. You know, eradication of democracy in the workplace is the first thing that happens.
First casualty. I mean, can you imagine someone striking in the Third Reich or in Stalin's Russia? I don't think so.
No. Go on strike and get met with a policeman's baton or bullet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But interestingly enough, you know, the very cushiony, jobs, and they're not so much now, but they were 20, 30 years ago here in the United States, were created as a result of, you know, of striking, of people who actually, you know, went out and fought. I mean, with their fists and with their clubs to make sure that we had proper working conditions. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, these capitalist bosses did not surrender their prerogatives very easily, did they?
No, they did not. And they're not, and they won't surrender it easily again, I fear.
Oh, you're right.
So, but they have been very successful at eroding not only the union presence in the United States, but the middle class as a result. So, Jim, I got to take a break, buddy.
Good night.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, and we'll, you know, look forward to hearing from you again real soon. And that was our good friend Jim from West Virginia. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to get in on the radio program, I'd love for you to. If you're still on hold, hang on. We'll get to you. Telephone number is 1-877-443-2366. You can get your chance on Conversation Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Radio for a Free America. All things reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I will be right back.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Close your eyes for a moment and imagine you're away from it all on a remote, unspoiled beach somewhere. Take a deep breath and enjoy the warm sea air. Sunlight streams through the palm trees as gulls call out from above. A real paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. And with your help, places like this one can last forever. You see, the Nature Conservancy works locally with communities, businesses, and people like you to preserve the most precious natural places around the world. They protect the animals that live there, the plants that grow there, and even the water. That way, this beautiful place will be beautiful forever. And we'll make sure that closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. That's nature.org.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution. For 12 years, Molly Holmes suffered the side effects of mood-altering psychiatric drugs, now being investigated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
I was dizzy. I had headaches. I was nauseous. I felt numb. If I had felt suicidal before that, I really felt suicidal afterwards.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No, no more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
You're back on All Things with Bruce Birch. I would love to also, I have some interesting audio that I wanted to sort of play. I know there's a couple of people on hold. We'll get to you here briefly. But there's an interesting clip that I was able to pull this off of the president's radio address this weekend. I'm hoping that my producer is watching the chat there, so she knows that that's for it to be cut. Okay, there we go. All right, fantastic. Agnes, if you would please go ahead and run that weekly radio address, the president addressing the nation.
And now a message from the president of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week, newspapers published sensitive information about my administration's telephone surveillance of U.S. citizens. These irresponsible reporters made public classified intelligence and secret codes that might fall in the hands of the terrorists. Codes such as Star 67, which terrorists might use to block our crucial efforts to use caller ID to track their calls to other evildoers. From these reports, terrorists might also glean the technology to access their personal options on their voicemail and re-record their outgoing greeting, which will mislead and confuse terrorist investigators with false identities. But perhaps most worrisome, terrorists might get unlisted numbers, which is just a few dollars more per month on their home phone bill, if they have the plan with just a monthly flat rate and their choice of the three calling features. If terrorists' phone numbers and full addresses are not listed in the phone book, we're never going to find them. I strongly urge the press not to divulge these secrets, or the next 9/11 is on their heads. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. We don't want the terrorists to find out how to do caller ID. Okay, yeah. Well, anyway, that was the president addressing the nation this weekend on the NSA spying program. Let's go over to the phones. We have Luke, who has been waiting very patiently over on line two. Luke, how are you doing tonight, and welcome to All Things.
Evening, Bruce.
how are you?
I love the way, though, on this spying thing, how it is an extremely limited system,
investigation. I didn't know $200 million was extremely limited. God, I mean, I hate to think what his idea of a widespread gathering of numbers is.
Well, funny you should mention that, because I have a story right here in front of me. Let's see if I can pull it up. Yep, here it is. That is basically that U.S. authorities want to get access to European citizens' data on phone calls, SMS messages, and emails. So if you want to know how widespread, they want to get everything from Europe, too, now, apparently.
Well, like I say, I'm just waiting, you know, like I said, the one I think is going to be fun is when some reporter, when some district attorney shows up and says, I want a listing of who has called this person and who they've called. You know, some district attorney shows up with a court order for the NSA to turn it over in some real criminal investigation. And then it's going to be fun to see if they're, you know, how fast that disappears, you know. So, because you know, down the line, there's some prosecutor or some attorney that's already looking at this going, you know, how can we get hold of those records?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That database is out there. Somebody will want into it. You know what I mean? And it may even sound like a reasonable, you know, I mean, a real criminal investigation or something, you know. You know, we want to know who OJ was talking to or whoever. You know what I mean? But you know what I mean? And they're going to say that you all have the records and we have a legal right to look at them. It's like, no, you don't. No one has a right to look at them.
Well, and that's just it, is that here's the slippery – well, and you sort of have nailed it, and that is that the slippery slope has begun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if the federal government can do it, then why can't state government?
Mm-hmm.
And if state government can do it, why can't local government? You know?
And like I said, so I'm sure that eventually, you know, well, we'll be able to do it for maybe an Amber Alert or something like that. You know what I mean? I'm sure
sure.
Somebody will try to come at it from some odd way. You know what I mean?
Like if you speak out against it, then you'll be painted as being something. You know, you hate children. You're probably a child molester. So, you know what I'm saying?
Well, have you been watching any of this stuff on CNN? I've been noticing a shift in the media now, or at least on CNN. Instead of now going after missing white women, as we call it, you know, the damsel in distress dress syndrome, their new thing is, for some strange reason, CNN's gotten really behind this investigating polygamy.
Investigating polygamy?
Well, they had Anderson Cooper's 360 and all this thing where they're looking into this this guy that just got put on the 10 most wanted list. This sort of like an offshoot of the Mormons.
Right.
And I mean,
yeah,
the other night
I read about
3 hours on it, you know.
They spent 3 hours on it.
They spent the entire that was what the entire Anderson Cooper show was on it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I think they just got burned out and figured out people were catching on about the, you know, looking for the missing white women, and they decided to switch to the new topic of the month.
So let's look for the missing white man.
Yeah. Well, essentially, this guy, they know essentially where this guy is, but the government, they won't go in after him because they're afraid it's going to be another Waco.
Oh, no.
That he's on some
Not
compound, you know, and all this stuff that they suspect where he is. But almost all the law enforcement says we can't go in there because we do, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Well, the Mormons are real violent, too, aren't they?
Well, you know, how it is. You remember that thing, you know, where the DIA was investigating the Quakers, you know, and we know what vicious people they are. I mean, you know. You know, that group down in Florida that was going to those peace protests, you know, and they just had to make sure they went after them. Because those Quakers, we know they're real dangerous folk.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, this whole spying thing is just, it is completely out of control. I mean, interestingly enough, I say that. But now, there is there's going to be a guy, apparently he's going to be, he's a former NSA staffer, and his name escapes me right now, but he worked for the NSA under Michael Hayden, the Air Force General Michael Hayden, and apparently he is going to be testifying before the House Armed Services Committee next week, and, you know, one of the little teasing tidbits that I read over the weekend was that he was going to be testifying that the NSA has even perhaps used satellites and satellite technology to spy against.
Well, like I said, this is just what we've uncovered. They've uncovered so far. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff they ain't even touched. You know what I mean? It's down the line. This is just the tip of the iceberg. This is just what we barely see. I mean, you know, they were talking about. They said, you know, they think, you know, because I think it passed in the last time with the Patriot Act. I mean, I'm sure they've been doing these essentially break-ins to do these search warrants. You know, in on location. You know, sneak and peeks or whatever it is. You know, where essentially they can break into your house, look around, go back out, close the door behind them, and they won't have to tell you they've even been there. So, I mean, that's essentially what they can do.
Wait a minute.
With the Patriot Act.
Do you remember that joke? What was his name? Stephen Wright said, "Wait, somebody broke into my house and moved all my furniture around to exactly the place it was where it was before." I'm sorry, it wasn't funny then, and it's not funny now. You know, I don't know why I even said it.
At least one to clean up. That's all I ask. You know, at least make sure they come here and get the trash.
If you're going to come in, at least take the trash out and, you know, water the dog on your way out.
Yeah. The other one this weekend that I have the new nickname.
Luke.
Luke,
I got to take a quick break. Can you hang on until after the break?
Sure.
All right, well, hang on. Hang tight real quick, and we'll get right back to you. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch, and Luke is on the line with us. He's going to hang on and come right back after the break. And if you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366, or you can also send me email if you're so inclined, bruce@brucebirch.com. Luke and I will be right back.
Tell me what's the reason. Dear heart. Tell me what's the reason. You know she went to see the doctor, and then she read a magazine. Forget the book, I told her then, don't want to hear about the book again. Dear heart.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. When you're calling up your mom on Sunday for Mother's Day, or mom when you're speaking to your kids, just so you know, the NSA may be on the line too, and it doesn't matter that you're not related to Osama. The NSA has been secretly collecting the phone call records of tens of millions of Americans, reports USA Today. The NSA's goal is to create a database for every call ever made within the nation's border, a source told the paper, calling it the largest database ever assembled in the world. And surprise, surprise, the NSA isn't using warrants to monitor these calls either, despite the legal requirement to do so under the FISA Act. Who's the man who set this whole thing up? None other than Air Force General Michael Hayden, Bush's appointee to head the CIA. But he wasn't alone. He got his friends in the corporate sector to go along. The NSA's been working glove hand with the telecommunications companies that consumers ourselves sign up with. AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South all are in league with the NSA, furnishing data on 200 million Americans to Big Brother. Only QWest refused to play ball, according to the paper. You've heard of the military-industrial complex. Well, this is the national security telecomplex. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it. I'm Matt.
Go back on All Things with Bruce Birch. Just got a really quick before I go back to Luke on the phone there. I had a really interesting thing the guys in the chat room have shot to me, and I want to make sure that you guys know about it on the air. And that is that apparently the official White House transcript has been altered. When Bush was in Germany, I believe he talked about catching a 7.5-pound perch. And now the official White House transcript says, I mean, that was actually what he said, and of course that's impossible. Perch don't get that big. Apparently changed now the White House transcript to read They've all been busy moments, by the way. I would say the best moment was when I caught a 7.5-pound largemouth bass on my lake. And that's what's been changed in the White House transcript. Not the first time that's happened. Matter of fact, I remember probably 5 or 6 other times throughout the last few years that they've done that as well. And Quaker Freedom Hater in the chat room also reminds me that the punchline to that joke was that I tried from Stephen Wright was, but it was all moved 2 inches over. All of my furniture was moved 2 inches. 2 inches over. Okay, let's go back to Luke over on the telephone there. Luke, are you back with us, buddy?
Well, you know how it is. They, of course, practice feng shui, so they had to make sure it was just right, you know. but the thing about the bush thing you were just talking there about the fish, just remember, this is a man-made lake that is stocked. So this was like going
to a
fish farm.
Exactly.
All
you
got to
do is throw a net out.
Like, why don't you throw some dynamite in and wait for them to flow up to the top? I promise God. You'd have had about as much impact.
Exactly. I mean,
you'd have had more choice going to the market saying, I want the one there on the left, you know. That's about as exciting. No, but I've got a new nickname for this weekend. And a lot of people didn't run, I don't know if you've seen the tape because it's not overly exciting, but my new person is, as I call him, Senator Sellout John McCain.
Okay.
This thing with him up there at Liberty, it's like, you know, I could understand it if they'd attacked him during the 2004 election. That's his choice, what he wanted to do. But these are the people who attacked his family. I mean, you know, it's like saying, you know, that's part of being a politician. I accept you're going to get called names and people are going to lie about you. I mean, that's just, you know, that's part of that job. But when they come after your family, I mean, like I've said before, this is mob tactics. You know what I mean? They came after his wife. They went after his adopted daughter. I just cannot see somebody, you know, forgiving that. So that makes John McCain the ultimate sellout on that.
John, yeah.
So that's why I'm calling him now a senator sellout.
Senator sellout, John McLame.
Yeah. Well, it's like they say,
John.
Is he going to start up in a couple of years? Going to start up the Straight Talk Express? It's like, yeah, that's fine, but we're going to have tires on one side, on the right side of the bus. You know?
Yeah, really.
So,
well, you know, the what's his name? Jerry Falwell, there, the Liberty University president, moral majority guy. You know, he has historically. He has wielded way too much power in this country. He and Pat Robertson and the other nutzoids out there, James Dobson and you know the whole lot of them, man. If they focused on what they do best, which is religion, and left themselves out of the political arena,
what they do best. I don't think anymore. I think now it is either politics or business. I think religion is about third or fourth down on their list of things.
I swear it is. You're absolutely right.
I mean, it's one of those things like, say, if they, you know, these are the people who 20, 30 years, not them, but 20, 30 years ago, most people, you know, agreed to the fact that, you know, you keep, you know, it's like they said, what is it, the two subjects you don't talk about is religion and, forgot the line. Oh, gosh. But you know what I mean? Religion was one of those things that you just didn't mix with politics. You know what I mean? Now apparently, it's like, say, you couldn't run for office without having to explain it. You know, if you were, say, an agnostic or an atheist, you can't run for office. They would cut you apart.
Well, again, you know, you're absolutely, there's no way that an atheist could win, just like there's probably a very slim chance that someone who's not married could win.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll bet you $100, Abraham Lincoln, as ugly as that man was, there's no way in hell he would ever have won the presidency in this era of television.
Oh, I mean, if you go back and look at the pictures of our forefathers, I mean, there ain't a whole, you know, I mean, I mean, a lot of that, like they say, it just depends on what is good looking at the time, you know what I mean? it's one of those things. There ain't a whole lot of it, you know, that we'd really say we're proud, you know, nowadays. But, of course, like I say, back then, it's like say, well, if you want to see the president, yeah, you get on your horse, and 3-4 weeks from now, you can make it to Washington.
That's right. You know, those little linotype lithographic pictures that they used to do. Yeah.
So.
But daguerreotypes, those two, yeah.
But like yeah. I say, it's going to be interesting. I'm hope we're just hoping on Monday. It's like, please, Patrick, please, let's have the frog march.
Well, I'm thinking it's going to be Tuesday. I think it's going to be Tuesday. The reason why I say that is because in the article that Jason Leopold wrote, he said 24 business hours. So I'm assuming that they're not counting the weekend.
Well,
I'm thinking that they're probably going to count.
I assume they're going to give it the Monday off because they don't want to get into this thing with the thing tomorrow night with the president and his brilliant plan to put 5,000 troops on the border.
Which we're going to try to get to.
The thing Tuesday morning is here comes Roe, and that will just totally block that off the page.
Yeah, which I was going to try to get to at some point tonight because I really think that that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the tail wagging the dog kind of thing. You know, that whole speech on Monday night.
Well, think of
is going to be all about trying to.
Sorry.
Uh huh.
Well, think of it now. You're going to have 5,000 National Guard troops right now at the start of the storm season in the Gulf Coast, the fire season out in the California areas, and you're going to take 5,000 National Guard troops, and you're going to say, well, you guys got to go stand on the border. And these are guys who have been on, like, some of these guys are on third, maybe even fourth tours. You know, and it's like,
oh, and by the way, we also have aircraft carriers steaming at full speed for the Gulf to attack Iran. I mean, let's go ahead and throw it all together there.
But like I say, it's going to be long for, like I say, when the storms come in, these governors are going to be screaming bloody murder. You know, we have to have the National, because we saw what happened with Katrina, with, you know, most of the National Guard's gone. And, you know, and that was one big problem with Katrina was the fact there was nobody there to help, you know, because they were bringing the National Guard from all over the country to have to help on that, because all the guys from Louisiana and Texas and the Gulf Coast were all overseas.
Well, I'm thinking that you know, it's going to be a mess. This spring and this summer is going to be rough, and I live in a state that is affected by hurricanes, and so I can't help but think, you know, we do have a Democratic governor, and I know for sure, you know, we deal with hurricanes quite a bit, so hopefully he will have a plan in place to deal with this. But,
let me get off, because like you said, you have some more people on the line. I don't want to take up any more time. So you all have a good evening, and we'll try again next week.
All right, Luke, man, thanks a lot for calling in from Tennessee, and I hope you have a wonderful week, man.
You too. Bye.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye. And that was our friend Luke from Knox Vegas, Tennessee. Now, I used to live in Knox Vegas, and I don't know if I've told Luke this on the air, but here for a while I lived there in Knox Vegas when I was a burgeoning musician. Maybe someday I'll whip out the guitar and play some music on the air. We'll see. Maybe, probably not in the very near future. But at one point, I pursued a career as a professional musician and didn't do too bad for a while, but decided that other things needed to take precedence, like raising a family. So, Knox Vegas. Yeah. Okay. Let's Agnes, I wanted to do one more. Before we go to the break, though, I wanted to try to get one more clip in. And if we could do the, let's see here, if I can take a look at what we've got here. Agnes, if we can, let's go ahead and, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to run this some of these clips from the Dixie Chicks interview tonight, too. But, Agnes, if you could cue up the Natalie Maines clip one and go ahead and play that, if you can, for me. And then we'll go
I said
ahead
that
and
I
break.
Don't like that the president is from my state.
You said you were ashamed that the president
is from my state.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you have to take. I'd have to say that was an insult to the president of the United States. I mean, he's certainly been insulted. He's certainly been insulted a lot more since then by
Oh, it's definitely meant as an insult. But I'm just saying, ultimately, what I said is that I'm ashamed he's from my state. I think that that is stupid.
You're not sorry at all for what you said that night in London.
No. Sorry about what? Sorry about what? Sorry about not wanting to go to war and not wanting people to die and...
You'd do it again?
No. Yeah, I've said so much worse than that, I'm telling you.
All right. We'll be right back. This is Perch. All Things Reconsidered. We'll be right back.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy,
come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricane, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works, and other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Oh, yeah. Till I've lost in a grave caused by jealousy. Before we went to the break, I played a little bit of a clip of some 60 Minutes segment earlier tonight about that was primarily about the Dixie Chicks. And Agnes, let's just go ahead and get right back into I think we've got enough time to do the second and third clips. Go ahead and do them back to back, if you will.
One song in particular, a single released 6 weeks ago, sums up their current state of mind.
I paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
It's called Not Ready to Make Nice. The song is powerful and unrepentant. The anger isn't directed at the war or the president or their many fans who deserted them. It's about the hatred and narrow-minded intolerance that they encountered for expressing an opinion. As artists, they wanted to respond with music and a video to drive home the point.
It was hard to write it because it was, we each felt the same way, but we didn't want to make too much light of it. We didn't want it to be too preachy or too heavier than it was. And after we wrote this song, we felt like it was exactly how we felt.
Now it kind of seems like you're picking the scab again. When you're picking the scab, you're like you're pouring salt on the wound.
We didn't write the songs thinking about what other people wanted us to say or what would be a hit on radio. I needed to make this record to be able to get past it.
You couldn't pretend that nothing had happened.
Yeah. You can't come back going, all right, let's pick and grin all over again.
It's either a clever marketing ploy or the Dixie Chicks have decided to commit career suicide. It's too early to tell which. Billboard magazine called the single beautifully layered, melodically crafty, and refreshingly impetuous. But you won't hear it being played a lot on country radio stations because people call up and say they don't want to hear it.
Do not play it again.
The song has fizzled on the charts, yet oddly enough, it's one of the most downloaded country songs on the internet.
Well, how do you explain the fact that it's number 37 on the charts and number one in downloads on iTunes?
I think you explain it that when you're in the corporate world and when that's your livelihood and when 100 people email you that they'll never listen to your station again, you get scared of losing your job. And why do they need to stand up for us? They're not our friends. They're not our family. And they cave.
The worst
okay,
part was
that.
The threats.
There was one specific death threat on Natalie. Had a time, had a place, had a weapon, I mean, everything.
And this was where?
This was in Dallas, so at our show in Dallas. You will be shot dead at your show in Dallas on whatever the date was.
This wasn't paranoia. This was well-founded concern.
Yes, and you don't know what people are capable of. We had a radio station say they had our picture on the side of one of their vans, and they were just driving down the highway, and the car pulled up with a shotgun and pointed at them out the window just because our picture was on their van. And it's just, it's very real. You know, it only takes one cuckoo person.
It was definitely scary because it seemed so... It wasn't just somebody wanting to write a hate letter. That was somebody who obviously thought they had a plan.
The police knew about the threat.
Yeah, the FBI and the Texas Rangers knew about the threat. We got ready in San Antonio and then flew in on a jet. We went straight from the police cars to the stage and straight from the stage back to the police cars and back to the plane. So, you know, it was all surreal, but at that stage, everything was surreal.
Thank goodness nothing happened, but Marty and I joked that we were in the round last tour, so we were in this huge, a lot of real estate to cover on stage, so Marty and I just stayed as far away from that place as possible. Kidding, of course, but...
In fact, Emily and Marty could not be more supportive of their lead singer. They share her politics and back up her candor, even when she disses country music, which has been their bread and butter.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to bring those clips to you tonight, and I wanted to do it at this time of the show, and there's a reason for that. They embody the courage that it's going to take back this nation from this thuggish, buggering horde of people that want nothing more than to exploit the labor. They want nothing more than to concentrate all the wealth. They want nothing more than to create a theocracy wherein their folks can be president for life. But it takes, you know, but it takes the kind of courage that these three young ladies, these Dixie chicks, Natalie Maines and her two compadres, it takes that kind of courage to stand on your conviction, to say what you mean, and then to come back and follow it up by saying, you know what? I don't apologize for what I knew was the right thing to say. I don't apologize for doing exactly what my principles told me to do. The principles that we stand on the left are principles of justice, of equality, of peace, of nonviolence, of economic freedom for our brothers and sisters, not for those who want to use us to make millions of dollars. What we stand on is something completely different. And so thank you, Dixie Chicks. And you know what? I want to recommend to every single one of my audience, please do go out and buy one of their albums, especially the most recent one. Show your support to these women to keep them going, because we need to hear their voices. Oh, my God, do we ever need to hear their voices? If now is not the time, then when is the time? So thank you, Dixie Chicks, for everything that you have done. And maybe, you know, maybe I'll try to get them on our radio program sometime soon. Okay, we need to wrap the show. It's four minutes before the hour. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for tuning in tonight. Just a very quick little note that I got from my friend Andrew Fetter, who is on our show recently. He's going to have a book signing event for his book, When the Angels Have Risen, next Saturday, May the 20th, 1 to 5, at the B. Dalton Bookstore, at the Boulevard Mall in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm sure if you go to his website, andrewfetter.com, you will F-E-D-E-R, andrewfetter.com, you can find out more information about that. I'd like to thank Agnes Kincaid for producing my show tonight. Happy Mother's Day, Agnes. Thank you so much for producing the show and for doing such a wonderful job. I'd also like to say thank you to John Fox, the head engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for pulling off the sound for us, my friend. Also to Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services for helping keep the hardware and the software doing what it needs to do. And last but not least, I'd like to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Whoops, not quite last but not least, but I'd like to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights for sponsoring our burgeoning radio network. And also Ben Birch over at White Rose Society, my friend. Thanks for archiving my show and for being such a wonderful support for what we're doing. And last but not least, to my good friend out there in West Virginia, RMR, it's all been for you. Good night. Good night.
It was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. And when the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be all right. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution,